This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatto. This week, two groups of scientists reported that they had transferred properties from one atom to another, even though there was no physical link between the atoms as we normally think about a physical link. In other words, they teleported the quantum state of one atom to another. Well, hey, if you're a Star Trek fan, you probably think, big deal. Kirk and Spock did that all the time. It's done with a transporter. Actually, transporting a human being from one place to another is a ways off. Teleporting quantum states will probably prove most useful in speeding up computing rather than in beaming people. But what this news of quantum teleportation does highlight is just how much science fiction has set the stage for our understanding and appreciation of real science. Without Star Trek, where would anybody even know what teleportation was? And while we aren't beaming up yet, science fiction has sometimes predicted the future with amazing accuracy. Arthur C. Clarke, for example, predicted geosynchronous satellites. And those first Motorola flip phones? Yep, inspired once again by the Star Trek communicator. Well, this hour we're going to be talking about the intersection of science and science fiction from a new venue where science and science fiction do intersect. The Science Fiction Museum and Hall of Fame opening today in Seattle. And if you'd like to join our discussion, please do. Our number 1-800-989-8255. 1-800-989-TALK. And if you're here in the audience, please feel free to step up to the mics on the front sides of the auditorium here. Let me introduce my first guest. Paul Allen is a co-founder of Microsoft. He's also the founder and chairman of Vulcan Incorporated and the founder of the Science Fiction Museum and Hall of Fame, which is located in the same building as his Experience Music Project, from which we are broadcasting today. Welcome to Science Friday, Mr. Allen.
Thanks for having me on Science Friday.
Why start a museum and Hall of Fame like this?
Well, I think science fiction is a big inspiration for creativity and thinking out of the box. And as a child, I was exposed to science fiction probably around age 11 at a local branch library and became a voracious reader. And it's become such a broad part of our culture today, all the different movies and television shows that are based on science fiction. So this is a way of giving back to people that love science fiction in all of its forms.
Did that book, and I remember reading in the paper this morning, you said it was Robert Heinlein's Rocket Ship Galileo. Was that the book?
That's correct, yes.
Did it influence the direction that you took in your life, reading science fiction?
Well, I think that science fiction, again, forces you to think about the world and the future possibilities of what could happen in the world in different ways. And also, I think it reinforces your own idea that your creativity can be expressed in maybe new ways of technology, which obviously certainly was part of my background.
I want you to put your tour guide hat on for a second and take us on a little virtual radio tour of the museum. Some of your favorite spots, what would we see here?
Well, I think we've got many amazing artifacts from Captain Kirk's chair from Star Trek. We have
how'd you get that one?
That was actually at auction, and no, I haven't sat in the chair myself.
How do you stop yourself from sitting in that chair? Didn't you say, I've got to sit in that chair?
You know, you have to
You
really should be a starship captain to sit in that chair.
I see. And you didn't qualify yet for that. No. Okay, go ahead. So what else would we see here?
Well, we have many, many other movie artifacts from Blade Runner to the Alien series of movies. We also have a couple of globes that display surfaces of fictional planets and real planets that are 6 feet in diameter, very, very amazing. We have a space dock where you can see spaceships from a number of TV shows, movies, and science fiction novels and stories. So, there's some amazing visual experiences, and there's an amazing amount of memorabilia. And we have, of course, if you are into ray guns or communicators or anything, we have an armory and just about every possible form of different communicator or weapon that you need for your off-planet travels.
Okay, we know where to shop, one-stop shopping. You also have books here, a collection of books of science fiction.
Yeah, we have an extensive collection of both first editions and a lot of the pulp science fiction, which is where science fiction got a lot of its early beginnings.
Uh-huh. Is there any one thing besides the chair that you have the chair, which I would consider the prize? Is there one you're looking for now that you would like to add? Maybe somebody's listening, so we'll get it to Paul.
No, I think we've got a lot of very interesting different pieces of memorabilia. But anybody that's got something in there, if they have underutilized robot in their garage or flying saucer or anything of that nature, we're more than happy to give it a great home.
All right, Area 50, some people listening from. let's talk about some of your other interesting projects, especially the one, Burt Rutan's Spaceship One, which you're a prime backer of. That's going to be launching on Monday. Tell us about that.
That's right. It's an amazing project that Burt and his team down the Mojave Desert have put together. It's basically there's a carrier ship called White Knight that carries a rocket. That will go up to 100 kilometers. It's a piloted vehicle, and so you're basically the pilot is going, you know, in the boost phase. He gets dropped from the mothership and he goes straight up at Mach 2.5. And then hopefully he'll coast up to 100 kilometers and come back, glide back safely to Earth, half an hour or so later. So it's very exciting. You know, we're expecting quite a few people to come on Monday for the launch.
Now, why do you as personally feel like you have to back a project like this instead of the government or someone else or some other private person?
Well, I think actually what we're trying to compete for, in the short term here in the next few months is the X Prize. Mm-hmm. This prize, this flight on Monday will be the first privately funded astronaut to exceed basically the Earth's atmosphere. So that's very exciting. Then we're going to try to win the X Prize, which is a $10 million prize for doing something similar within a few week period. So that's a very exciting prospect as well. But I went and saw the first space shuttle launch, and any time you see a rocket with a human being inside go up into space, it's just a very, very exciting event.
Do you think that the future of space is in the private sector?
Well, I think the private sector certainly has a part to play. Things of huge scale, like exploring different planets, anything beyond the Earth's orbit. Certainly, I think NASA and other government entities need the huge scope of funding involved to accomplish something like that. But when you start talking about giving the man on the street an opportunity to have an experience and to see the black sky of space and the stars and accelerate up at many G's and come down at many G's and land safely, that's something that will be done by a private industry.
Any desire on your own to be one of those passengers?
I have to confess that was a factor in this project.
And so which flight will you be going?
I think there's quite a few more test flights we need to do first.
But you really would like to be one of those?
Sure. I think that, I grew up in the 50s and 60s, and then at that point the space program was such a large part of our culture, the Mercury program, the Gemini and Apollo flights, the landing on the moon and all that.
Yeah.
And so just to even experience a part of that, I think is just very, very exciting prospect.
Do you remember Disney used to have Wernher von Braun would come on and explain how we're going to get to the moon and back? Do you remember those at all?
I
remember.
Those kind of semi-documentary shows that Disney used to do, and The World of Tomorrow and all that. And I used to watch those as a kid too, and read. And I used to read the books by Willy Lee and other German rocket scientists to explain how these things are going to be possible, and then to see that become reality. In the 60s, land on the moon, that was really amazing.
Now, what was it, and speaking of science fiction, was it Arthur C. Clarke again who said when he was asked about what struck him most about getting to the moon was, and I think his reply was, the fact that we could go to the moon and not go again. And that says a lot, about what has happened in space, and space travel, human space travel since landing on the moon.
Yeah, I think when you have such an incredible program that brings people together and accomplishes something like going to the moon, then there's the what next. The question always comes up: what next? Our goal with with things related to space tourism or the X Prize is to show that you can do things to give people that kind of a space like experience on a smaller scale.
You're also involved in the SETI project, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence.
That's right. Yeah, down in Hat Creek, California, we're putting together an array of antennas that can serve both to listen to signals potentially from other planets or civilizations, and also to do conventional radio astronomy. And that's a project in that line of research that was government funded for a long period of time, and then they dropped it. And then actually Carl Sagan was very persuasive in convincing me to try to fund that.
Mm-hmm. And also, you've committed $100 million to brain research.
Yes, we have a project here in Seattle, a Brain Atlas project and the Allen Brain Institute, and we're trying to do a very thorough study of the genetics of the brain and how the different how genes are expressed in different parts of the brain, and we feel that's going to be an incredible help to scientists all over the world, and we're very excited to start releasing our first data later this year.
How do you decide what you would like to support? I mean, people must approach you all the time with ideas for funding things. Is this a gut feeling that you have about where you see science, the cutting edge being? Or?
Yeah, I guess it's pretty obvious that science and space exploration and technology in general are really in my blood, and I just try to find things that that either need to be done, should be done, or where I can make a difference in a significant way. And the things I've been able to participate in have been very, very, very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that if you don't do it, no one else is going to do it?
No, I mean, some of these things, I'm just happy that there's an opportunity. When I found out there wasn't a science fiction museum, the idea had been kind of germinating in my mind. I was just very excited that there wasn't, and I started thinking about ways we could take part of the museum here and put a science fiction museum into it. And I think it's turned out great.
Is there an intersection between science and music? Since we're inside a music museum, also.
I think there are a lot of people. It's interesting. A lot of programmers. Obviously, I was involved in founding Microsoft. I mean, a lot of the programmers there, we all listened to rock music as we programmed, and then at night we read science fiction books. So I think there's definitely a crossover.
And, are no Twinkies in the middle there somewhere?
Yeah, no, there's probably a couple there, and probably a lot of soft drinks in the middle of the night too, and pizzas. I think are the other. There's some. If you had to list all the factors that are in common, those
you need
are
the ingredients. You need the right recipe to get this.
Yeah,
stuff
it's you
done.
Know it's kind of a potpourri of different.
But you always hear about mathematicians and musicians having the same sort of brain working. Think that's true there?
Yeah, I mean, I just think that, science fiction stimulates the imagination, probably more strongly than any other genre. And I think people that work in creative fields, that's probably why they feel such a strong connection to science fiction.
Do you think this is this museum is just the first phase of a larger science fiction endeavor of yours?
Well, I think, we're obviously down the line, we're going to look to expand the museum and broaden its programs. And, the museum area, I think what we've done with the music museum and the science fiction museum, other museum concepts that might tie into that, mm-hmm. I'd certainly be open to those. But I think there is a great synergy.
Do you think there's a way to teach science through a science fiction museum?
Yeah, in fact, that's a great point you bring up there. We actually have some true science stuff. We have some things from the Mars Explorer and some of the Mars expeditions in one of our exhibits here. So that's one of our themes, is trying to show the connection between what was once science fiction becomes science, and how that's evolved, what the real science is. Mm-hmm. And so there's that through line runs through science fiction into science, and it's a very strong one.
Do you think kids are as interested in science today as when you were leafing through the library there, looking at science fiction books, or just thinking about science in general?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I think, so many of the things that were, the idea that, when I was growing up, that everybody would carry around a portable communicating device, which you asked everyone to turn off before the show started, that was science fiction when I was a kid. And some of those things are part of our everyday experience now. So, I think that's, that theme continues today. And with the frontier is both for science and technology, for instance, artificial intelligence and understanding how genetics and the brain work. There's so many frontiers there that are fantastic.
It's hard to know. We're going to get into this a little bit later, but it's hard to figure out where science ends and science fiction begins these days, isn't it?
I think you're going to be talking to some of your other guests about some of those crossovers later.
All right, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to bring on some more guests to talk about the intersection of science and science fiction. Lawrence Krauss, Octavia Butler, and David Brin. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break. Don't go away.